For January the 14th, 2022, we talk about Far Cry 6, Axiom Verge 2, Kingdom Come Deliverance, and much more. Welcome to Level 399. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I had all of that vim and vigor last week of coming back and starting the year anew, you know, and that's all gone.
Now it's back. Welcome back to the dystopia.
If you'll remember, I started the year with all negativity, saying it was going to suck to manage my expectations. So.
Maybe
that factors into why I'm still riding that wave of negativity to positivity. I'm still around. successfully tricking myself.
Yeah, positive relative to negative. Yeah, so it's all about it's all about how you coordinate your instrument, you know.
I've heard two negatives make a positive. So that's why if you put two negative people together, that's why they're really happy.
There it is.
Now, as Exhibit A, I will present to you No Children by the Mountain Goats. let's see. Title of the year. Looking at one more week on that, Dennis, you think?
Yes, indeed. I think that means we'll crack open that poll on episode 400.
I like that quite a bit.
Synergies. Yeah.
So if you're hearing this, you have until the Monday after you're hearing it, which means that let's say the 17th of January to vote in the poll there. You can check all of the social media stuff for that. Want to give people plenty of time to vote because it is of utmost importance that we pick the best title and alternate title for last year. Yeah.
I just pinned the Facebook post with the link. So if you've got us on Facebook, you can go to it there and find it easily. And then I'll make sure it's all over the Slack as well in the next week.
Fantastic. So let's see. Ben, how are you doing? What you been up to?
I'm doing good. I think today my ray of happiness was I don't know if I said this publicly or not, but I'm leaving my job next week, and so I've been telling people at work, or I've kind of gone loud with that. Mm-hmm. But one of my friends who used to work in my building but moved to another building gave me like a gift package and a card that was like really sweet. And
oh, nice.
And so a work friend became a friend today, so
yeah,
that was a
That is one of those things where like people at work, you know, it's a little bit like you don't say the nice things to somebody until it's the worst possible time, you know, like, you know, not that everybody needs to go around complimenting each other or whatever. But when I got laid off, it was like the last week everybody was like saying all this really sweet stuff, possibly to cheer me up, although they knew I was
I feel like there's another contingent where it's like all the people who've been like tactful about what their opinions of work are will just open the dam for you and lay out all their feelings.
On the friendship side, I think I figured it out. It's that the chance for rejection is so low because this person's on their way out anyway. You know, it's like telling the girl at summer camp you love her right before you leave.
Right, right. And we'll come back here next year and it'll be out.
We'll always be friends.
Gotta go, bye.
Nice. Well, congratulations on taking that step, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, man.
David, how about you? What's going on?
Not too much. Just weaving and bobbing.
Oh, mixing it up.
Yeah, you know.
It's like a memento situation.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to be careful. You don't want to bob when you should have weaved and weave when you should have bobbed.
Mm-hmm. That's how you get got.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Was it a minute too late? Whatever. I can't quit the wire. Shut up.
Oh man. But nothing else.
Go back and watch that.
Oh, it's good. Have you not seen it before?
So I started watching it when I was working in the neighborhood it's set.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
And then kind of fizzled out.
Season one is a little hard. It's a little hard, the first half of it.
Yeah.
I think you just need to adjust to the format, but once you do, like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I will say, Baltimore, the one city I hope never to set foot in again.
Yeah. Sometimes there's a place. Sometimes you just run into those places where it's like, yeah, bad vibe. You know?
Sorry to all of our listeners from Baltimore.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. They're sitting there like, David got out.
I don't know. I don't want to judge it. I haven't been there, so I'm not going to judge it. But I feel like people talk shit about Cincinnati, but yeah. I think there's definitely good parts to it if you know where to go.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's. I think the thing that most was emblematic of Baltimore was what the mayor was running. This was Hillary 1 or 2 time. The mayor was running in the Democrat primary and bragged about prosecuting a octuple homicide.
Ugh.
It's like, yeah, but you just said your city had an octuple homicide.
Yeah, at that point, I think you have to get the Unreal tournament announcer to come in.
It's a weird flex, bro.
it's just one of those weird contracts that municipalities have, huh?
It kind of speaks to the industry he's in, because guys, probably in his bubble, that was a really cool thing,
right?
But, guys, we need to figure this out now. I want to know what city has the best kill death ratio. In terms of, no, hear me out. In terms of what city produces the most killers in other cities while having the lowest murder rate itself? Like, what city do people leave and then go kill people?
I don't know. Suddenly, I'm feeling really bad about this joke.
Yeah.
Oh,
I bet it's Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm thinking purely on a math point, because kill death ratio is not a zero sum game, right? Because like two halves don't add up to the same as three ones, right? Maybe, although it does, actually. I don't know. I need to rethink this. But I was trying to think how to maximize that number. But I'll think about this on mute.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling like maybe a Florida thing. You know, it seems like Florida produces a lot of crazy, but I don't hear about that many deaths from the crazy.
Yeah, on a state level, I totally believe that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Florida, the trick about Florida, right, is that they're it's something about their laws and like the reporting, like just that more.
Yeah, they have really strong sunshine laws.
Yeah, so anything that happens gets put into the local press and it bubbles up. Whereas like, you know, basically we're seeing stuff that happens everywhere, but goes unreported, but because of the way reporting works in Florida, we see it that, and also like, there's gotta be some kind of, a cognitive bias around that. Just like the industry knows to look for stuff in Florida. So it surfaces it like an availability heuristic kind of thing.
You know, there's some intern at all the major newspapers whose job is to Google Florida man every couple days.
I mean, when we were doing those damn Ross kids, I had an alert. I had an alert for Samurai Sword, and I had an alert for bow and arrow, and I had an alert for Florida, various combinations of keywords.
Okay. So there's an interesting thing about the death ratio in real life, because you can die of natural causes. It's not like a video game where it's a zero-sum game where it's like you had to have been killed by someone else.
Right.
So is like, are we including death in this like kill death ratio plan? So that's like a.
So then there would have to be like, so you would look at like a state or like a town that produces just a shitload of corn and exports it to places and stuff, or like grows a bunch of tobacco. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, tobacco is a good one. Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah, tobacco exporter.
Is that Mother Nature has the ultimate kill streak?
Yeah, no, yes. I mean, we're doing our best, but nobody's killed nature yet.
If you get a long enough kill streak, you unlock the global warming special ability.
Yeah, I was gonna say any of like the 6 or 7 extinctions is like the God of War ability where you press two thumbsticks in.
Yeah, no, global warming is like the rubber banding. Like, oh, Mother Nature, you're getting too far ahead. Humanity's gonna start destroying you to catch up.
Yeah. No, that's us striking back. This is Graham. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Hey, Dennis.
To be fair, this is by far the least depressing thing that's happened this week. So.
True. Dennis, how about you? what's going
on? Oh, man. I've been in the world of furniture assembly. Our basement is close enough to done that we are putting all the stuff in it, and we bought a bunch of those like internet assemble at home modular couch pieces.
Okay.
Which is like plywood and fabric and screws, and they're like, you do it. The touch that I think is incredibly nice is, you know, the I don't know if plywood is considered good for building couches. My inclination is not, but it certainly is splintery, and every package that we've opened has a set of gloves in it.
Good.
To shield use from splinters, which was a nice little touch. But yeah, like it's
an admission though.
Yeah.
Why not just send me non-splintery wood?
That'd be nice. That would also cost a little bit more.
It would also be heavier.
A lot bit more. Yeah. 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 We've had one in our living room for a while, cause they like send an advance like trial one, I guess. And that's held up really well. So I think, we've got good stuff, but it is like going back to kindergarten jigsaw puzzles, assembling these, and you just, you know, take that glass of wine down into the basement, put on some music and spend the night, assembling couches. It is the night before Christmas. And if you're a parent, you know all the assembly that happens there, but it's just ongoing and with not nearly as fun things.
when you were growing up in your family, was there like a designated assembler? Like somebody who that just kind of like landed on?
Yeah, and that definitely fell to my dad.
Okay.
He was the kind, though, that held everyone else hostage while he was assembling something. So like me and my brothers would have to be on hand to help. Which meant just stand silently while my dad figured it all out.
Right.
And occasionally he'd be like, I need the thing. Hand me the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be like, well, there's a whole chest of tools over here. I'm not sure the thing. And it went downhill from there. So,
Right.
That is fun times.
I was the designated assembler from a very young age because I was the only person who read manuals.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, no, just all of the put together furniture. Still am, honestly. I still get called over to put stuff together. So,
Is there a lower limit of complexity where people feel okay by themselves, or is it like anything with a manual I need to bail out and call Cole?
I mean, it's. I'm gonna say no. I'm gonna say that like there have definitely been things that they have put together, but it's been pretty embarrassing. Some of the stuff that they have called me over, like what it ultimately like down to like just like, oh, so you just had to, for this table, you just took the legs and you just had to kind of screw it on. Like it was already kind of just in there. You just kind of screwed the legs on. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
It's, you know, the old saying, try twice, call Cole once.
Yes, exactly. I think that eventually they develop a fear of doing it wrong and messing it up in a way that can't be undone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been over here not doing an awful lot. My Twin Peaks rewatch has moved over to the season 3, to the return. It's my first time rewatching that, and that's cool. It's really good. It's nice going in. Like all in one big row, because stuff that didn't make a lot of sense before now does.
Do you feel like you're catching new details?
Yes. Yeah. I'm also reading like the interquel, like the book that they did, the Secret History of Twin Peaks. That was kind of, it's kind of like a House of Leaves kind of deal, like annotated kind of thing. And that has been, like explaining some stuff in a narrative way. That's pretty good. Yeah, no. So that's been cool. Ben, when I was talking about Metroid, you mentioned that Black Mirror episode. I watched that, Metalhead. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Oh, I texted you what I thought. It was nice and tense. I dug it, except there's a moment where the drone goes to pick out a kitchen knife. Like to supplement to you and to make itself deadlier. And it goes up and down the, like the knife block and like picks one out. And all I could think of was Bruce Willis's character in Pulp Fiction.
Like, in the pawn shop.
Yeah, in the pawn shop, and when he settles on the samurai sword. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very much like that, and I just had to laugh. Also, not sure that I like the ending very much. The final shot, mm-hmm. Let's say. What ends up happening to the character, I think, is good. But the reveal of
what they were doing. Yeah, there's kind of like two endings. There's the final shot, and then just before that, there's kind of like a flipping of what the normal is, I guess.
Yes.
I'll just put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna be honest, I haven't watched very much Black Mirror. Like, that's probably the first full episode of that I've watched. So
it is hit or miss. Mm-hmm. And it more hits towards the beginning of the series than the end.
Yeah, that comports with its nature as an anthology and also as a long-running anthology, let's say.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't quite get it, because I feel like everything I hear about Black Mirror, like all the plot things, I'm like, that's just the news.
Right. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I feel like there's pretty good writing on it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like formulaic after you've seen like maybe 20 or so, but it does a good job of like introducing characters and their motivations really quickly to set up the main driving force of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, like, it's one of those things where sometimes a message doesn't need to be subtle to be like A, necessary, or B, well conveyed. Like, everything mm-hmm. that I've read about it, it's like, yeah, this is really on the nose. And it's like, I mean, the social commentary on like the Twilight Zone was pretty on the nose too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it's, I remember feeling that way. Weird callback, but I remember feeling that way about Popo EO, the mm-hmm. video game, which in video games in general, I think have more permission to be on the nose on stuff, because it's more about experiencing it than, you know, taking in the metaphor of it and everything. Like,
yeah.
And that's how you get the headshot, yeah.
Yeah. but yeah, there's, I guess you engage with that stuff differently. Media and like TV or books and everything, I tend to demand a little more subtlety, but it's not always necessary.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's non-video game stuff. I want to talk about video games, though.
Scandalous.
I know, right? To do that, we're gonna have to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past everybody who's here was here last time, so the last week or so. Let's see, who has something new?
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting.
I have something. I guess it's not entirely new. Well, no, I do have something new. So the new thing is I streamed a horror game called Faith over the weekend. Faith.
Okay.
Good.
F A T E or F A I T H?
F A I T H. Like the Wham song. You got to have faith. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I streamed this. It's a very short horror game. It's available on Itch. It's like a pay what you want kind of deal. It is modeled after like old Apple IIe or like ZX Spectrum. I will never say ZX. You monsters living over there on that island trying to tell me how to live my life. just a real kind of a crunchy lo-fi 8-bit computer kind of deal. This is chapter 1 of 3 that I played. I'm gonna do chapter 2 a little bit later, and it's good. You play as a an exorcist returning to the site of this horrible possession that kind of went awry a year previous. Takes place in 1987. You're going back to this house in the woods trying to get rid of the demon that is there. Like a playthrough of it takes about 40 minutes. And it's weirdly, so you move around pretty slowly. The only like interaction that you can do is like running into something to pick it up or to like activate it. You have an attack, which is to raise your cross in order to do holy damage to whatever is in front of you. It kind of ends up becoming, when the demons come out, it becomes a little bit of a almost like a shoot 'em up kind of deal, where you're avoiding enemies who are coming at you and trying to do sustained damage on them by holding up your cross. You can't hold up the cross and move at the same time, so it's kind of like playing chicken with them, right? You know, just setting yourself up for the next attack where they're going to be coming at you and getting in a position where you can, you know, have the cross up and do damage to them as they're coming.
Do demons do ranged damage, or is it all melee?
So they'll kill you if they run into you, and at least one of them, the boss fight has like a little projectile that like fires out in a spiral around it, but it's relatively slow.
Yeah. You can't just like hold the cross up and let them run into it.
No, because they'll get you. Yeah. But what's interesting is like a playthrough of it takes 40 minutes. At least it did for me on the stream. But then there are 5 possible endings you can get based on a decision that you make at the end. And these range from, you know, just a good ending to bad ending to like weirdly funny.
So I watched a lot of Let's Plays, and I just remember about half the endings involve someone getting yeeted out a window.
That's a story beat in the kind of the main before you get to the ending kind of deal. Before you get to the ending choice, one of them just involves like so you get a gun and you have one bullet and you have to decide what to use it on. Out in the woods, or whether you want to use it at all, you can use it to shoot and kill a deer. And when you go to drive away from the scene, there's a deer standing in the road. You crash, and when your guy gets out, he's surrounded by all these deer, and like, oh, it's payback time, buddy. Like one of them like gets up on its hind legs and runs at you, wheeling his forelegs at you. It's very goofy.
That's good.
Yeah,
looking at the video trailers. I'm loving what I assume is the cutscene style. Like you said, it's this really, the most of the game is this really, really lo-fi, old-timey look. And then the cutscenes look almost like MS Paint outlines.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it, but it's a really cool vibe.
Yeah. So it's higher resolution. It's still really limited color. It kind of looks like something you would have made if you like, I think people our age would, or probably like right at the tail end of this, like if in your computer lab in like kindergarten or first grade, you had kid pics on the Apple II. You know, something like that. It looks like something that would be kind of drawn on there. But with the added benefit of, you know, everything in the game is, you know, really zoomed out, very limited animation, again, mimicking this old 8-bit computer kind of vibe. The cutscenes, however, are incredibly zoomed in. They're very, you know, cinematic, and they are rotoscoped. So it's very obvious that it was like tracing frame by frame over a video.
Somebody. It's got that look to it.
Yeah, so it's like weirdly naturalistic and fluid because of the higher frame rate of the animation, and just like because of the wiggliness of it, it looks like it is like phasing through different realities or something. And you know, everything that is animated this way, it is like the monsters or the possessed girl, stuff like that. So it is a really good aesthetic result, you know, from the choices that they decided to make, that kind of like lowish chunky resolution matched with the rotoscoped kind of close-up kind of deal. Like rotoscoping is how you get like the weirdly fluid animation in like the original Prince of Persia.
Yeah,
so it's neat. It's cool. I would recommend it. I'm being a little bit cagey about specifics, but like it's, I think it's basically free. I mean, kick the developer some money so they can finish this and work on better stuff. It's only like $1 or $2 or something like that. But like, I would say, yeah, it's cool. And I'm excited to check out part 2.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So it comes in 3 parts, is it?
Yes. So part 2 came out, I think 2 years ago. The first one was in 2017. The second one was in 2019. And I think the third one's coming out imminently.
Cool.
Yeah. Any other questions about faith?
No.
Okay.
Good stuff.
The other thing is I played and finished Axiom Verge 2.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was middling on Axiom Verge 1. I started this back closer to when it released. It kind of got that weird surprise release on the Switch. It's part of like an indie presentation that they did late last summer, early last fall kind of deal. And boy, I like Axiom Verge 2 better, but also it is a profoundly strange game. from like a pacing point of view, eventually you get to kind of this point where navigation becomes kind of a little bit more difficult than I would like, because what they do is there are kind of two realities that you're navigating, but they're linked. So you could be navigating in the prime reality as one character with like a full set of your movement abilities and stuff. And then you can like the way that they do Metroid style, like morph ball kind of stuff, is you throw out a drone that your character's consciousness goes into, and the drone can the drone has the exclusive ability to navigate the other reality. And so you have to kind of like figure out, okay, I need to enter the other reality here and then get over to this other place, you know, over here. And like, that isn't necessarily apparent. So this
isn't this just the Black Mirror episode you were describing?
No. So it just ended up kind of getting into a little bit of like, I mean, one of my complaints with Metroid Dread, and also like a complaint that I had, like this is something that Metroidvania games can fall into kind of often, actually, which is problem of, you know, problems with navigation. How naturally do they guide you around the world, right? And this is, I think, combined with the fact that it is way more open than the original Axiom Verge was, by virtue of the kind of movement abilities that they give you. And also, you end up having this dual dimension kind of deal, where you're kind of exploring the same vague spaces twice and needing to like press a button to see like how the geometries overlap so that you can get into places that were not necessarily available in one version of the place or the other, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had this navigation problem with Carrion in the past, right? That game where you play as the weird little tentacle monster that is rampaging across a facility, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I still end up liking this, just because whereas Axiom Verge 1 gave you just, quite frankly, an irresponsible variety of guns. you were getting a new weapon like every, I don't know, like every four or five screens, to the point where it ended up kind of losing a lot of its meaning. This is a little bit more on like the Castlevania side of things. Like if Axiom Verge 1 is the Metroid and Metroidvania, this is the Castlevania and Metroidvania. You start out with an ice axe as your melee, and you're primarily doing melee combat in this against the drones who are out there. The only like ranged attack that you get is like a boomerang. So this, I think, simplifies it and makes the combat like just more interesting than just zapping everything as it's away from you. It feels a little bit more, you know, it doesn't have a stamina meter, but it's real soulsy in a way. To a degree, in a way that like Castlevania Order of Ecclesia is kind of soulsy, in so far as, you know, you're primarily working in melee and you are managing your distance from enemies and playing that off against the kind of like limited attack speed that you have, right? So like just mechanically, it ends up feeling a lot better. And I think the platforming is just kind of just benefits from kind of a more conscientious level design you know, kind of more interesting to navigate around this. Like I said, with better abilities, the story is better. So it's been a while since I summarized it, but you're playing as like this tech CEO who was called down to an Antarctic base that has been having problems, and you, in trying to get it back online, you go down a cargo elevator that happens to also be a one-way portal to a different world. That is kind of
you know, as you do,
as you do,
as yeah. as we wish most tech CEOs would do.
Yeah, yeah. and you're trapped there along with a whole bunch of other people who have been working at the base at one point or another, and the entire place has kind of been taken over by these drones. Everything kind of seems to be, you know, kind of ruled over by these nanomachine gods that are vaguely styled after like Sumerian deities and people and stuff like that. And you're trying to figure out a way to, find your daughter because you were called there by a ransom letter, and also to escape back home yourself. When I say it's paced weird, there are just like big things that happen that kind of go unremarked upon. This is actually a good thing because Axiom Verge 1 was way too talky for me. It was kind of stopping you with just unnecessary text, you know, your character remarking things to himself. It would have benefited from being just a little bit more sparse and atmospheric. This is, you know, kind of more judicious with the way that it does things, which is pretty nice. The knock-on effect on pacing is noticeable, but I'd rather have that than have it, you know, kind of handhold me through every step of the way, you know. Another weird thing about the pacing, there aren't really boss fights. You just stumble across boss type enemies in the world. And you can take them out for skill point upgrades or not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason to take them out is skill points.
Yeah.
Like they're not gating anything else.
Right. You can, you can get past them, in order to get the upgrades you need. Yeah.
So if you fail to, take them out, is that like a, oh, well, they're gone, you have to wander around more?
No, they're in particular areas. Just kind of going about their business. So when you respawn, you can just go back and attempt to attack them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It what you're describing sounds like the studio did a really good job learning from the first game.
I mean, to my mind, yes. I don't know how common my own complaints were about it, so I don't want to say that, like, oh yes, they heard the WAF about it and they got religion and they did it right this time.
No. I mean, you don't have to be shamed into getting better at development.
true. Yeah,
see, I just remember the first one just not feeling good.
Yeah, I didn't feel that, so I couldn't tell you about how the feel improved or didn't improve based on what you had. Like, specifically, sure. What was it something about the jump or about the shooting?
Yeah, I just remember it being way too slow, and just constantly having to be switching guns because it was like, you need a certain gun to solve some puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is the weapon wheel done?
It's done really well. Like, you're not really getting a lot of weapon upgrades, which is pretty nice. You just have an inventory that you can go into, to change it over. It's not going to expect you to, like, okay, you have to destroy this particular kind of, this particular kind of block. So you're going to need to use this kind of weapon. Either you have the ability to take it out with one of your attacks or with a maneuver, or you don't.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. There's a grappling hook in this, and I feel like I should talk about how this feels. So you only get it as the drone, and it will let you do like a, it's almost like an extended mantle, in its kind of base form, you know, so if you're having trouble getting up and over a ledge, it'll give you just like a little bit of a boost. But the real cool thing is eventually you get the ability to latch onto a corner with it and then charge it up. And then what that does is it increases the tension, and it will kind of fling you. It will like do a slingshot. It'll slingshot you across like spaces. And so you end up using that to do like these big leaps as the drone. Yeah.
Nice. So it's almost like I'm envisioning this as you're almost grappling hook to rubber banding.
Yes. Yeah. And it's real satisfying, and you get abilities that like once you get that, you can like blow through certain blocks by doing that. So you pound down barriers with it. It's neat. It is an interesting variation on the grappling hook, and the way that the drone mechanic is an interesting variation on the morph ball in Metroid. Huh. Yeah. So would I recommend it? I don't know. I think that there are better Metroidvanias that you could be playing, Grime, Hollow Knight, etc. Like maybe play those ones first. But if you had complaints about Axiom Verge 1, I think that this is different enough that simultaneously, if you didn't like Axiom Verge 1, there might be something here for you. If you did like Axiom Verge 1, you might start playing this and think, okay, this is not readily apparent how this connects in story or mechanics to the first one. So I think the two games are kind of going after kind of different audiences in a way, which is I appreciate the obstinance of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when we talked about this a long time ago, I think one of the points we brought up was that the sequel is only on Epic Store and the original one's I think on everything. Is that correct?
I don't know. I played this on the Switch.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. I think it led on Switch on consoles, and it appears that it is not on Steam. So yeah, that makes sense if it would have been an Epic exclusive.
I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or if I looked it up after, but I remember the dev talking about how like kind of the reason for the choice is like making sure, or kind of it becoming like your normal job making video games since this is your second one, and so like having a stable source of income being like a reason for doing that sort of thing. So I can kind of understand that perspective.
Yeah, I remember you bringing that story either during the grind when I was talking about this, or as its own kind of multiplayer. Thomas Happ, like, and it's like very very particular for him. So it might have changed in Axiom Verge 2, but like for Axiom Verge 1, Happ did all or most of the production himself. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of as a solo programmer, artist, musician, which is really impressive, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the case for this, but like, I don't, you know, if the exclusivity on PC, be it timed or not, gave him the security to develop the game without Kickstarter backer pressure or whatever, or you know, etc. I don't begrudge him that. I certainly begrudge him less than like a large studio or a publisher who would have made this a similar kind of deal, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any questions about Axiom Verge 2?
No.
Okay. Cool. Ben, how about you?
I only got old stuff, but I'll gently talk about it. I continued playing Gloomhaven. I've started, I think, yet another campaign since last week.
Is this the non-MMO version of Altitus?
Wait, what is that?
Just where you're always making alternate characters at the expense of advancing a main one, just because you want to try everything.
Possibly,
yeah.
This isn't my fault, I swear. our normal Monday group, one of the guys was sick, possibly with COVID.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because that's going around for everyone. So the two remaining people, we just started a new campaign. And so I started as so I think I only have six campaigns that I'm in right now, because
Why is the word only in that sentence?
I started as the final character that I hadn't played as before, as a starting character. And it was the Mind Thief, and it was really fun. So I was happy to do that. I think so far, I think the roughest character to start with is either the Scoundrel or the Cragheart, I think. I think everyone else is kind of smooth sailing. Anyway, so that's a side note. But yeah, that game's still fun. It still holds up. It's still a good way to socialize with people. I will start more campaigns if you guys are interested in starting campaigns. So.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
That's all I'm going to say about it. I have not progressed in any stories beyond where I've already gotten in, like, my solo campaign. So all that's still whatever. So it's just a means of socialization for the most part.
Nice. It's turn-based, low pressure. Like, you can talk while people are making decisions like that.
Yeah. Usually you talk shit about the person who's taking the longest if they do it consistently. Of course. You know, yeah. It's part of the fun. And then I've continued playing Storybook Brawl. Still fun. That's kind of my magic filler, kind of permanently, it seems like, or as an ongoing basis until that gets bad. They had a tournament over the week or weekend, I think earlier this week. They had like a, it was for who qualified in December. And so that was interesting to watch. Like, definitely the people who are like the top tier people, like, just are really, really, really good at the game. The streamer I watch is like number one in the ladder or whatever and playing, but it's usually because they play like a shit ton of games and they like typically win. But like in the tournament setting, it's like who can get a busted combo like consistently. And so by like the competition is just so high because it's like someone could be doing like having a really good run and they'll still place like in the bottom half just because like other people are just putting together like insane combos. So that was interesting to see. Also gives me like no hope that I could ever like be like a top tier player or whatever, just because it's like, oh man, I cannot see those types of lines, but it's really cool that it's there.
It's it's best to get that crushed early so you don't spend a lot of time chasing it.
And then the final game I want to talk about is I continued playing some more Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Cool.
Not too much more, maybe like an hour or two more of it, progressing the storyline. It still like has a lot of potential for me. It's interesting to see like a lot of the design choices they're making are kind of about are story focused essentially, and trying to either get you immersed in the atmosphere or like slowly learn one or two of the mechanics that they eventually try and teach you all of. So like an example of this was I was put on like a night watch for a town I was in, and the mission was just literally wait until morning. And so like you're just walking around and chatting up the guards. You could go take a nap if you wanted to skip it. But it, you know, it's just putting you kind of in an immersive, like of where you're at in the story. You're kind of in a situation where there's an opposing army that's like sacking towns. And so you're kind of like on edge because you're worried that they might do that to the place that you're at. Yeah, so I still haven't played like a tremendous amount of the game. I'm not too far into it, but it still seems like it has potential. I'm trying to focus like the character you can kind of like choose if you want to be. It's like a decent RPG where there's like three or four strategies of what you can try. I'm trying to do speech focused and figure I can like learn all the other strength skills maybe later, or like, you know, like grind to do that maybe outside of the main quest or something. But even still with that, like I'm not perfect on speech. There's like a few things where you can try and lie and you can mess up, but yeah. And then they have like a perk system that's kind of interesting where it's like basically all trade-offs, but it's like they're trying to be like immersive perks. So like the first one I unlocked was called Manly Odor. Ugh. Which is you are persuasive towards women, but you are bad at stealth. And so so like maybe like points for creativity, I guess, but
I guess,
yeah. But a lot of the perks try and be like something like that, where it's like it's basically focusing on like want something that you want to do well, but it starts to be at the expense of other types of tactics. So that said, I still like stole from a bunch of chests in the armory of the town. Why not, you know?
Yeah. If you can talk yourself out of the consequences. Yeah,
and the lockpicking, I don't really know how it works right now, because like I bought one lockpick and was able to pick like an easy chest. I had 5 lockpicks earlier in the game on an easy chest and they all broke like immediately. So I'm kind of a little bit gun shy about doing that sort of thing, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Good so far. We'll see if it opens up even more. So,
yeah. I mean, it's heartening that the perks you can take are trade-offs. I think that that's the important thing. The important thing in an RPG system like that, you know?
It's an interesting way to design it. It definitely adds to complication, right? Especially at the beginning of the game, because you're not sure how all these things are being tested, so you don't know how much of a detriment it will be to you.
Right. Or if there's an obvious kind of dumb stat where it's like, oh, I put all of my points into wilderness survival, and turns out that doesn't really factor into
matter
anything
at all. Yeah.
I know last time we talked about this, you mentioned that it's pretty goofy. I mean, even goofier than a perk named Manly Odor. Is that continuing to kind of clang tonally for you?
I think it kind of buckled down a little bit and with this playthrough, where it's not as like Porky's or National Lampoon's-esque, I guess. I think it's like, it's more like a straightforward story, I guess, in the last, you know, session that I had. So
nice.
Again, we'll see where that goes, though. Who knows?
Cool. Did you have anything else?
That's all I got.
David, how about you?
Not a whole lot. I've continued on with Far Cry 6. Okay. And I'm trying to think. Not anything too incredibly specific. The weapons continue to get more and more over the top.
These are the MacGyvered weapons from like the weird future tech that you have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've got like a lightning gun that can shut down vehicles so you can take them over.
Okay.
And
it's a temporary disability, I guess, with the lightning, huh?
Yeah. You know, just temporary. I've got some sort of voodoo gun that lets you, you can temporarily see through walls and then like snipe people through walls.
Some kind of voodoo gun.
Are these bespoke or are they randomly generated Borderlands style?
Bespoke. So this the voodoo gun, you had to track down idols from the for the three gods that make up this like island's religion. You know, take them back to like this cave, and then you get the crazy voodoo gun and a new like animal companion that's basically this like weird panther thing that can basically like take out enemies stealthily, just kind of magically shadow step up to enemies and kill them. So I mean, all over the things, nail guns, there's one that's a shield and a hand cannon. I think there's a harpoon launcher. So it very much, continues the, Far Cry, thing of going completely off the rails. It's also somewhat strange. The game now has, a bunch of weather effects, and I think the strangest is whenever there's lightning storms, it's just ludicrously destructive. You know, lightning strikes just bullseyeing helicopters out of the air and stuff like that.
Cool. Does lightning strike cars and temporarily stop them?
No, for some reason, real lightning causes the cars to explode. It's only, you know, magical science gun lightning that it just temporarily stops them.
I mean, that makes sense. You know, the lightning gun is handheld, right? And, you know,
sure.
And we have to presume that the lightning coming from the sky is, you know, really, really big because it's in the sky. It's a sky gun.
It's handheld by God.
Yeah. We have no idea how far away it's coming from. There are lots of unknowns about sky lightning.
Fair enough.
I mean, this is also a game where I think your objective is to find a cure for the cure for cancer. So,
well, it's more you're just trying to, you know, do a little bit of overthrowing, just a little bit of revolution.
So this has more than a little bit of Blood Dragon in it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, some of it may be I'm currently playing through the the hip hop contingent. Mm-hmm. Arc of the story. So maybe some of the others are more grounded. Although mm-hmm. I know the one where you're allying with the guerrillas that overthrew the government back in 67. Your main guy, his idol animation is just him like doing pull-ups indefinitely, and he has idol dialogue that's just him going, "Fuck you, gravity."
Of course.
So I'm not holding out for it being more serious.
If you say that confidently enough, gravity fucks off and you can do more pull-ups.
Yes. Yeah, that's just science. other than that, I picked up Idol Champions of the Forgotten Realms.
Okay.
Which is one of the idol clicker games. I've never played any of those before, but you know, they're basically games that a lot of the gameplay revolves around you setting up and setting up your team of characters or your weapons or whatever it is, and then just kind of letting them run without much influence from you, and just getting exponentially increasing stats so that you can, get more stats so that you can, repeat the process.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you're making progress to buy things that will let you make progress faster toward goals that are, more stringent. And it's kind of right,
exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how this, compares, but this one, a lot of the core gameplay is you have different heroes that are all characters either from well-known Forgotten Realms games, so like the Neverwhere Nights games, things like that, from some of the books, so you have Drizzt and company, or well-known live play streamers.
Of course. Makes sense.
And the kind of the big thing is you have to put the, in each mission, you have a different layout of how the party can be organized as it's, walking infinitely to the right, fighting monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And then each character has, various characteristics, what race are they, what class, what alignment, that sort of thing. And then a series of abilities that affect characters depending on those traits and on the position of the formation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot about the strategy of what team you put together, and then how you lay out that team.
Yeah, and then they adventure while you're away. Is it one that that runs while the while your system is turned off, or does it have to always be on?
It does run as when the system's turned off, but seems to be significantly slower than what would happen if you just left it running.
Mm-hmm.
You can. It doesn't seem that viable to have that be the primary way you made progress.
Okay.
So the other thing that I don't know if it's typical is this one is very, very exponential. The way you level up characters is by, enemies dropping gold. And then as you basically collect gold, each run, that builds up a favor rating with whatever deity is sponsoring that adventure, okay. Which then translates to a bonus on the gold that enemies drop. So by this point in like a bunch of the adventures, I increase the amount of gold by 1 × 10⁷. And, you know, we'll often have characters whose DPS is like 1 × 10⁻². So just incredibly, incredibly, you know, exponential, which is interesting. You know, the one good thing is if you don't understand exponential math, this will definitely teach you that.
So you would recommend this for people in late middle school?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's very, I would recommend it for people who don't understand how orders of magnitude works.
Yeah, yeah. Or just even like scientific notation, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because it creates a lot of weird things where just things like, for example, if you decide you want to change up a party member halfway through, it seems like that should be like, oh, well, I've already spent all this gold. Yeah, I'm really going to be behind. But really, because the amount of gold you get is increasing exponentially, there's virtually, you know, every level before this current one, in effect, immediately costs nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I know, it's very weird, but... Oh, go on.
Oh, no, I've just on the exponential kind of increase note. I had recently been into one of these, really into one of them, called NGU Industries, mm-hmm. that I saw some people playing, and I was like, I'll give an idle game a shot. I stopped it because I saw the development was dead, and it was like, if it's, you know, not being supported, I don't want to hit like the top of this and then just be like, okay, I'd rather leave it on my own terms. But like eventually I noticed that like kind of no matter what I did, because of the way that everything increased by an order of magnitude, you know, each time I like got, you know, unlocked a new kind of production or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. For lack of a better word, it nothing ever got easier, and I never really got to do anything new. It was just like, like no matter what, the level was always set where, okay, like the upgrade will be ready in 4 hours, and it was just that all the numbers were changing, you know, and the rate of growth was, you know, getting higher, but so was the cost, and it was just always like it kind of felt like a prank being played on me, where it's just like, okay, check this and set it and come back in 4 hours. And yeah, so it ended up feeling really unsatisfying. It just like really treadmilly, more so than other stuff that I would even call treadmilly, right?
So I think the way this one maybe gets around that is each of the adventures is you know, set up into distinct stages.
Okay.
And you know, usually, for example, it'll start out like, you know, the course of this adventure from start to finish is like 50 stages. You know, ending up, you know, from just you leaving the tavern with your mission to defeating the big bad. But then when you're done with that, it'll just start over, but, you know, at the same difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
However, what they then do is then the variants you need to do will be like, right, you know, originally it was 50, now get to 100. So in effect, you know, beat it twice over.
Okay.
And so a lot of the challenge is not so much just, you know, increasing exponentially, but, you know, figuring out, you know, building up the resources to build, to beat that degree of difficulty in a single run, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's requiring more input from you than just having done all the stuff that leads up to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you know, strategy. There's also a number of things you can do to kind of put your finger on the scale. So, you know, you can unlock, you know, consumable potions that will, you know, for a temporary period of time, make you more powerful.
And I'm sure that eventually those start costing real money.
Yes and no. You definitely can spend real money. It is very generous with giving you free stuff.
That's good.
That's actually was the thing I was going to bring up as kind of the other part of this that's a lot of fun is that they sponsor a lot of live plays. And, you know, a lot of it is, you know, live plays that are specifically like the characters that are in the game, that sort of thing. And, you know, if you watch them, you know, they drop, you know, loot codes and stuff like that. So that's very, very generous. But if you don't want to watch them, you can just like look on the Reddit and, you know, once a day and like input all the codes.
Yeah.
But I've actually found them to be a lot of fun. It seems like they have pretty good you know, people playing it. The only person I recognize as a celebrity, but I'm assuming the rest are, is the guy that plays or the guy that voices Commander Shepard. Is one of the regulars in the game. Yeah, I guess in some of the Neverwhere games, he voiced a drow named Baeloth.
Okay.
And so he's kind of reprising that character, but is, you know, very, very fun to watch, very compelling, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, you know, that creates kind of a community angle, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's just kind of fun.
That seems smart, you know, from their standpoint as a, you know, selling a service game like that, being being exactly. That open to community outreach and content creator outreach kind of stuff.
Yeah. The thing that they just started, I think, over the weekend that I haven't looked into is basically having... got a whole bunch of the players together and are apparently doing like a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons PvP tournament.
Okay.
What?
Which, like, yeah, that was always a possibility, but wasn't, you know, isn't normally,
that,
you mean, know, a thing.
That feels like more of a 4th edition kind of deal.
Yeah, it's, I'm interested to know, you know, because obviously this is, you know, using a license setting from Wizards. I'd be interested to know if this is kind of them testing the waters for trying to make that be a thing.
Okay.
I'm mainly interested just to see, like, it's a number of the characters or characters from live play games that I've followed for a long time. So I don't know how much roleplay is going to be in it, but it's, you know, it's a lot of characters that could be very entertaining in a PvP setting, depending on how they handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. But
nice.
Yeah, that's really all I've got. It's, you know, kind of a dumb game, but, you know, burns the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just
sounds like a Far Cry game.
Yep.
Sometimes that's the type of game that you have the mental capacity for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Most of the time for me.
Nice. Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, I don't have new games, but I do have a new plugin.
Okay.
Which the only thing I've ever done like mods or plugins for before was XCOM 2. And that is a game that just, you know, from the get-go, that community has always been very mod centric. And so, it was, you know, it was in the launcher, the kind of link to download mods. And
I love it when
so
they
I
do
felt
that.
Comfortable with that.
Yeah.
What's that?
I like it when developers do that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, I cannot tell you the amount of anxiety I had around getting into mods for Trackmania.
Oh, right.
So there's a platform called Open Planet, which is a plugin for Trackmania that then has a bunch of mods you can download for it and stuff that really makes the game better. And I just had never gotten around to messing with it. It always feels like, oh no, I'm going to screw something up. It's like your family in assembling furniture, right?
Right, right.
I just have so much anxiety about permanently fucking something that I don't even want to attempt it. But I did it just because people kept on talking up the good features, and it's really cool and nice.
So I know like one of the barriers to getting into Dark Souls modding is the fact that you can get soft banned. If you don't play offline, like just there are certain things, especially on PC, where it ends up like it can be viewed as cheating. And so it stops you from being able to play. And that's like at a Steam account level kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Were you worried mm-hmm. about like not being able to participate in community events because you got put on some invisible list?
Yeah, so fortunately, I think this community hews closer to XCOM than to Dark Souls.
Okay.
In that it's pretty well known and well supported. And so I didn't have any concerns along those lines. But still, it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And indeed, I did it wrong the first time. So I downloaded Open Planet, and it said, you know, the instructions were like, download it to the folder that the Trackmania, .exe file is in. And so I did that and launched the game and couldn't get the menu for Open Planet to come up in game. And I was like, oh no, oh no, I did it. I did it bad. And come to find out that basically because I originally, found Trackmania 2020 in the Epic Store and then downloaded the Ubisoft Connect launcher, it was installed in two places on my device.
Oh, okay. So it was looking in the wrong place. I had to put it
in the other folder.
Yeah,
because it's so lame. Like, if you go to launch it from Epic, it just opens up Ubisoft Connect.
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst middleman.
Right. I ran into that trying to play Anno 1900 or whatever it is, 1800. Mm-hmm. Same deal.
Yeah. So dumb. But anyway, so I got it to the right place. I got it installed, downloaded a bunch of mods that I wanted, and it's really cool. So there's ones like for online matchmaking. Normally you have to like queue in and then just wait until you get a match. But there's a mod that lets you go and play other tracks while you're queued for matchmaking, which that's really nice just because, you know, a track can take 30 seconds to play. So no matter how short the queue is, you always have kind of the chance to do something. And the queue in that game, if you're an NA player, tends to be a bit longer because most of the community for that game, for Trackmania, is in Europe. But yeah, so there was that. There were some things around just like better UI elements, a checkpoint counter, which is not in the main game because, you know, most of the official tracks are pretty straightforward. Like, you know exactly where you're supposed to go. But the community will make a bunch of, they call them RPG tracks, that it's more like a maze or a puzzle to figure out how to finish it. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, it's really useful to know, like, how many checkpoints you've hit and how many are left, because that can get confusing yeah. as you're going through. Like I said, other UI stuff, but the main one, that is kind of fun right now and potentially could get very depressing, is I've never been able to see like how many times I've attempted a track versus how many times I've finished it and how much time I've spent playing.
Oh, some data is not meant to be seen. Yeah.
Yes. So there is a grind tracker that I downloaded. And every time you jump into a track, it shows you how much total time you've spent on that track, how many attempts you have, and how many finishes you have. And like in a single sitting, what I would consider not, you know, a ton of time on the track, I'm like putting in over 100 attempts. I'm like, oh, these numbers are going to get really big. This is bad. You know, it's early in the season. They just launched a new campaign for the new year. And so by the end of the campaign, I can't imagine what some of these numbers are going to look like. But I've always been curious, and now I can see it, and it's fun to see numbers go up. So
true.
That's what I'm telling myself. But yeah, Open Planet, if you install it in the right place, it was super easy to use. And, there's even more, I kind of put out a question to one of the Discords of like, what are the mods that I need to download, and have a whole list of useful stuff. So that's my PC gaming adventure on a game that I am just perpetually playing.
Nice, man. Mods are it's just one of those things. What was it recently that I played? No, it was Fallout 4, where I ended up doing a whole bunch of mods for quality of life, and then to kind of expand the settlement building kind of stuff around it. It's just one of those things where it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like a haircut. If you get a bad one, it will grow back. And if you do something wrong on a PC, as long as you made a backup, you're okay. get rid of that anxiety. Get that off of your back. Seriously, and you should be good.
To self, make backup.
Yes, always.
I always make a backup of my haircut before I go to the barber.
Yep. I've taken a selfie when I've felt like I had a good haircut. From front and the sides and the back, and kind of kept that for reference. You know, I only get
it's very useful to be able to do like a hey like this.
Yes, because I can only, you know, you go in and you say make shorter up. those exact words. I'm not getting my hair cut an awful lot because of the pandemic. I only got it cut once last year, but
yeah,
yeah. Nice. Well, did you have anything else besides messing around with mods?
That was the one new thing. I've been playing more Vermintide 2, which is fun, and done some of that gaming with David, done some of that just with randos. My favorite story is I jumped in with a group I found on the Vermintide Discord, super friendly and welcoming, and they were like, oh yeah, and I was like, I'm kind of a new player, is that cool? And they're like, yeah, we'll work with you. And we spent all this time trying to figure out, we had some problem with me connecting, and then I finally got connected. It was probably a good like 10 minutes of us like trying to figure out how to get me into the lobby. I needed to update my drivers, and then I couldn't request to be in their server. They had to request me to join it. And then we had to find each other on Steam and yada, yada. And then I get in and literally the game won't let them launch because they're too high level above me.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
They were playing on a difficulty level that the game was like, no. You're not allowed to go into that as a level 8.
There should be a button, like, you know, maybe like implement that in like at the Steam level, where you can just click that button and then just ship that person like an edible arrangement. Like a cookie bouquet or something. Like, hey guys, that sucked. I'm sorry. Here you go.
Yeah.
Have some cookies on dowels.
I am so sorry. Well, I think I was like, I'm kind of low level. And I think they thought like, oh, you know, like level 60 or something. And here I am level 8. be more specific on level differences, I guess, is learning. But they were super cool about it. And I ducked out and no hard feelings. And I've got them on sale. I was like, I guess I'll see you when I level up. And everyone was really, so, you know, it's also nice, to have a community where people are welcoming.
Yeah.
It seems like Discord is the place where that lives. Like a game's Discord, you can usually rely on, to be pretty, pretty friendly.
Yeah. Man, I wish that Discord didn't replace message boards, because Discords aren't really searchable.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, but I take your meaning. I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. So more Vermintide 2, and I guess there needs to be a lot more so I can actually hang out with some of these people.
Nice.
And lots more pinball, which sadly we unplugged the digital pinball machine. Because the construction workers are back to finish everything, so we need to get the pinball table unplugged and out of their way. But before that, it was high score hunting nonstop. and so it's kind of funny because, you know, Jen is working from home. I'm home all the time right now, and so. You just like, you know, I'd be in the kitchen and see her coming out of the basement with this look on her face like, I just did something you won't like. It's like, wait, what table were you playing? So it's good times.
Nice.
And I can't wait for the basement to be all the way finished. I'm guessing that's just going to be the default for hanging out in my house. If we have neighbors over or friends over, whatever. We'll just crowd around the pinball table.
Awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm envious. Not gonna lie.
Next time you're in Cincy, man.
Yeah.
We'll do it up.
Have you discovered like a new table you really enjoy, or are you sticking with what was it, Revolution 1812?
Class of 1812, yeah, that one is still really good. There's one called Cue Ball Wizard, which is a pool themed table, which every time you start it, they quit talking and start chalking. Is the intro line for that.
I love how dorky pinball is.
Yes. The cool gimmick for that table is there is a literal cue ball and eight ball in the table that you can like knock around with your pinballs. I have to imagine that they have to be like dummies or and this is in the physical, you know, digital table, they can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
In the physical table that this is replicating, I have to imagine it's not like a real full weight cue ball and eight ball, because they jump around a little more than I would expect, unless pinballs are way fucking heavier than I knew.
do yourself a favor and just like order some pinballs to have around, like to fiddle with. They are amazingly satisfying objects to hold in your hand.
Really? Yeah. Do they have a good heft to them?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Unbeknownst to you, this game, the physical version, uses only the purest depleted uranium for their pinballs.
Yeah. That's why there are no functional ones left. Really hard to keep the servos in order.
Yeah.
Have you seen or played the world's largest pinball table, the one that actually uses billiard ball?
What is this?
It's called Hercules. Look it up. It is gigantic. You know, like it still fits in an arcade. It's not like a circus. You know, circus pinball or anything. There's a place, I'm positive it shut down because of the pandemic. There was a place locally that had it. It's gigantic. And instead of being like a pinball, if you play it with a cue ball. Yeah.
That's cool. That feels like something that should have been at the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas.
Maybe it was there. Yep.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing it. Yeah. When we made our pilgrimage.
Yeah, it's not very good,
but this would be rad. for for the sheer entertainment factor, this looks like it would be rad.
Yeah, it's real slow, which should be obvious looking at it, but you feel it. It is not a high it is not a high octane game of pinball,
and to bump the table would be nearly impossible,
but you got a couple guys.
Yeah. Okay, heave.
Yep.
or get Hercules, I guess.
Yeah. Kevin Sorbo doesn't have, he hasn't worked in a while. It's fine. He's spending most of his time being a monster on Twitter.
He only works in Christian movies now. I don't know if you guys seen this or not. And when I moved to Vegas, they would have like specific Christian movies that they'd show previews for at the beginning of it. I don't know. That was just like a thing I was never
The beginning of what?
Just random movies. It was like there's like two tracks of movies. There's like general like Hollywood movies, and then there's these like kind of like similar to like Lifetime movies that come out, and they'll like come out to theaters and stuff.
A lot of Kirk Cameron kind of stuff.
It used to be like the movie theaters in general.
Yeah.
And this was in Las Vegas or in Texas?
In Vegas.
In Vegas. Weird. I would have expected that in Texas, not in Vegas.
And it was in a suburb too, so that's kind of what I chalked it up to, but.
You know what? I bet you that it can be chalked up to some creeping Mormonism. I think that maybe that is seeping out. Yeah.
All this is to say, I know Kevin Sorbo is still getting work as of 8 years ago. which my information may not be up to date.
Oh, thanks for the intel, Ben.
Nice.
I'll update the Sorbo tracker.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so this week we're talking about your biggest piece of unfinished gaming business. This is not necessarily your backlog, but it's games that you've started and you really want to finish. Either the campaign or 100%ing it, or, you know, New Game Plus, whatever. You're not done with it, but life seems to always keep you away from it. What games are those?
Yeah, I'll get a start here with Callum, who says, Pillars of Eternity. I keep getting distracted by other games, then restarting because I don't remember the story. Yeah, you can't hot swap a PC RPG like that.
No, that's tough.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, there's so many games I want to play, but I'm afraid to start playing them unless I know I'm going to have the time to sink into it. And for that reason, I haven't started Witcher 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Wasteland 3, No Man's Sky, Kingdom Hearts 3, and Final Fantasy 15. All fall into this black hole. Instead, I just keep playing shorter games I know I can find the time to finish. That said, I did finish some rather beefy games in 2020, like the Mass Effect trilogy and Dragon Quest XI. So there's hope for me.
Those are big games. So it's that's three of them in the trilogy. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, that's why they call it that.
Yeah.
I always need to keep a list of those games like that, like the big hunk of games, because I will find myself distinctly in the mood for something like that. Like, I want to start something big today, and it feels like when I've got that, I can never remember the stuff on my hit list.
Yeah, and so you end up going to the easiest thing. Which is
it's like, yeah, why am I spending 500 hours on this? This is just what was there when I wanted to start the 500 hours. Yeah. Damn.
No, I mean, and that's why I like backlog management stuff is always so tempting, is kind of having something at the surface like that. Yeah. Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says Final Fantasy 12. Got halfway through it on the PS2 and then the PS3 came out and I never went back. Bought it again on PS4, but an hour in and not touched it since. I tell myself one day I will go back. It's literally the only Final Fantasy game I've not completed.
A, oh, man. 12 is very good. B, I can understand why somebody would bounce off of it in the early going.
And Final Fantasy 14 is an MMO, and I think it's not fair to say that you ever really complete an MMO. So
you can get through the story content for that.
No one could finish Endwalker that fast.
Yeah. I think there are people who've already gotten to the end game of Endwalker.
Yeah, yes, they probably have.
Let's see. Dennis, what does David say?
He says, I've played all the way through Bloodborne twice, and both times I've told myself, this is the time I go through the Chalice Dungeons and fight Queen Yharnam. But that never seems to materialize. Third time's the charm, though, right?
Ah, you don't have to do that. you don't have to play the challenges. If you like the challenge, if you like the chalices, you can play the chalices. If you find yourself burning out on them, you're not going to find anybody who is more quick to absolve you of that.
You won't be complete until you do it.
You'll be fine. There's a cheat. There's a cheat you can do, which is looking up the fight on YouTube. Or honestly, the cheat would be you can actually like look up, because they've mapped out all of the seeds. So you can look up the randomizer seeds, quote unquote randomizer seeds, that will just put you into the room with Yharnam. So you can just do that fight. So and you can do
you do seeded runs in that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, no,
that's a whole thing.
Yeah, cool. That's like seeded runs is how you get the how people found the cum dungeon.
Oh no!
What?
the randomizer seed for a dungeon that has just like a really quick level up exploit, like enemies that die like instantly that will give you enough souls to level up multiple times. The first four letters are KUMM. So people call it the cum dungeon.
Nice.
Yes. See, I thought you were doing a pun off of seed. I was
No, that's just a nice, happy coincidence. Andrew says, Hollow Knight has got to be it for me. I loved that game to death, playing it all the way through, trying to find all the hidden secrets, playing bosses over and over again, some 40 plus time.
Whoa.
Just to be able to beat them. Sorry, I was laughing because Ben put in a fun little map of North America where Canada, the USA, and Mexico spells come. which is fun. Andrew continues, but since I did all the challenging side content in the base game, it meant I got, I got to the real final boss. It was so challenging that I just couldn't beat it no matter how much I tried. I still tell myself I might go back and grind it out one day, but every day I get closer and closer to just watching the ending on YouTube. Still though, one of my favorite games. I mean, even if you haven't beaten the final boss, come to us for absolution. Go, Genie, you're free. I don't think anybody could take your Hollow Knight bona fides away from you, based on that first paragraph there. So, David, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I've had a dream of marathoning through the Ultimate series. It's not so much life stopping me than that is, why would I do that to myself? I thought Ultima was an MMO.
So there was Ultima Online. That was the MMO entry. But there were, I think, 9 mainline Ultima games, along with Ultima Underworld 1 and 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I think, Chris, you, again, coming here for absolution, just play 4 until you get bored, and then check out 7 until you get bored, and then you're good.
You can't see it, but we're making the cross sign behind the microphones.
Yes. So let it be. Let's see. Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says, one of these days I'll play one of those Final Fantasy /Mario/Zelda Metroid games. No ellipses.
Yep.
No, that's just Smash Bros.
Yes,
you can just get all of them one fell swoop.
Yeah, play one round with all those characters in there, and then you're good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there a Final Fantasy character in Smash Brothers?
Ultimate has as DLC both Cloud and Sephiroth.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But does it have Sephiroth as Ronald McDonald?
No, not yet. Although I'm sure people have worked out modding for Brawl, so you know, just takes a weekend, one person and a weekend. Let's see. Phil says, gaming with friends, LMAO. Dennis, because I skipped you, oops. What does Ricky say?
Oh, I wanted Phil. Ricky says, the Green Hill secret zone in Sonic Adventure 2 battle. If you get all the gold medals, or S ranks, or whatever it's called, in every stage for every character, you unlock a 3D recreation of the Green Hill Zone. Back on the GameCube, I managed to get all of them except for one, the final stage. It's something like 20 minutes long, and any mistake or RNG bullshit with the final boss will ruin your run. It's been my white whale of gaming for 2 decades now. I still have that memory card and GameCube kicking around. So there's still a chance, but after all this buildup, it can't help but disappoint. I might just have to let this one go.
I think there's a PC version. You might just be able to mod it so you can get access, or do like a console command. Mm-hmm. Cheat. Hey, it's just like the poster on my wall says, real winners quit. I seriously, I've got a poster. It's real winners quit.
Real winners quit everything but winning.
It says just walk out. You can leave. Work, social thing, movies, home, class, dentist, clothes shopping, too fancy store, cops if you're quick, friendships. If it sucks, hit the bricks. Real winners quit. it's a poster from the Share Zone. There's a 3D art of a skeleton running. Yeah. So
I think there's two motivations at play in this kind of white whale backloggy stuff. Mm-hmm. One is seeing content, which, as you've talked about, you can just mod your way in, and that you want, you can watch it on YouTube. There's a ton of ways you can get to the content easily. Mm-hmm. The other is just want to, a more ephemeral kind of like, I want to have done it.
Yeah.
I want that to be true about my experience. And that requires you to do it the hard way, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I'm being kind of flippant by putting this out there. That's why I'm saying it as a joke. I'm also kind of being honest for myself, because that's where I've gotten to. But like, everybody has their own, kind of psychographic with that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't begrudge anybody who, genuinely wants to, take the walk themselves to get there. Right.
As long as you're enjoying the walk, or will enjoy the walk of the result of the walk enough to justify the walk.
Yeah, yeah. I would not suggest anybody do something that actively makes them unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what does do say?
Do says Red Dead Redemption 2. What a beautiful game. Can't 100% it.
Ooh, that'd be rough.
Beautiful and big.
Beautiful and big.
I mean, luckily, you can probably 100% Red Dead Redemption online because there's no content.
Yeah, they just kind of stopped. You just load up and you just get a little achievement that says "Yeehaw," and the text explaining it is "You've done it." Yeah. And Ben, round us out with Robin.
Robin says, "My matrix of shame stands at 88 games at the moment, but I'm stuck. I'm really hitting a wall with Death Stranding, and I'm still to platinum Bloodborne, DS 1 through 3, done, and Elden Ring releases looming. Help."
Yeah.
Gotta plat it, otherwise they lock you out of Elden Ring.
Yep. No, otherwise they're going to give you a worse version of the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matrix of Shame. What is that?
Trophies you have in the previous games influence the world tendency of Elden Ring.
Yes,
they've gone to a new level of opaqueness.
Don't spoil it that they're bringing world tendency back. Come on.
Oh, sorry.
I've never heard it called the Matrix of Shame before.
I like it.
Yeah,
it's just an order.
Yeah, I've only ever heard it called the pile of shame before, or the stack of shame.
No, the matrix of shame is Revolutions.
Oh, man. I'll do mine. Yakuza broadly, but Yakuza 0. I played Yakuza 1. We did it for WoF several years back. I love it. It's good. I like that kind of crime story. I like the promise of the goofy side stuff that the series gets into. It's just been one that I've been pulled away from. You know, it is big enough that it's daunting to commit to. And every time I've dipped into it, I was like, this is fun and stylish and good. I like the combat. The story is good. And then I just get pulled away. So, yeah, just going to say that. Ben, how about you?
Good answer, Cole.
Thanks.
I'm going to say the Mass Effect trilogy for me. Even though I've played all three of the games, they were all on separate consoles. So it's kind of like a secret white whale to like go back and like play them all on the same one, so my choices carry over.
Yeah.
But I also, as I said, have played Mass Effect 3, so I know where that leads. So I don't think I want to do that, actually.
I'm curious about it. So the Enhanced Trilogy was added to Game Pass recently. So there's that. I'm curious because I've not played it since they updated the ending, you know? Who knows, maybe it might be good. Although I am amenable to the interpretation that all of Mass Effect 3 is the ending.
How so?
Oh, just that like it you know, the entire game is showing you a payoff for the stuff that you did in 1 and 2. Boiling it down to just the choice that is made at the end is possibly slightly reductive. However, that could just be me trying to rationalize having played it and it, you know, it being 9 years since it came out and, you know, time gets you to be more generous to something, you know, more generous than you would be if it was fresh in your mind.
Does seem like that's what's happening here.
Yes. David.
I think for me, it's going back and actually beating Bloodborne.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm on the where's the last boss of the DLC?
Orphan of Kos.
Yes, I'm on that, and then something. I think like 2/3 of the way down the Chalice dungeons.
Okay. Have you gotten to the Defiled Chalice where you have half health?
Yeah, so I'm on that, and there's one that's like, I'm trying to think, it's that plus you take more elemental damage or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so basically the end result is the boss can one-shot you.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, that's definitely Defiled Chalice with the Watchdog and then Amygdala shortly after that.
Right, yeah. So I'm working my way through that. So yeah, I keep meaning to go back because it's by far my favorite game probably ever, and it seems like From has decided that those sorts of games aren't cool anymore, so I'm not getting any more.
Maybe. But have you beat the base game? Like have you done the actual ending?
I think I actually have a little bit more on that too.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I recommend it. Bloodborne's good. I mean, you know that.
Part of my problem is, and this is a thing that's come up before, like, the bosses are by far the least interesting part of Soulsborne games to me.
Right.
And so I have a tendency to, like, get to the final boss of a path and then not have much motivation to actually beat it.
Yeah. I can see that definitely being the case with Orphan of Kos. That's a really hard fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me was Rogue Legacy.
Okay.
I put a lot of time into that game and you know, learned every area and boss really well and just kind of how to get through it. Got to the final room, beat what I thought was the final boss, and then it enters its second phase and promptly killed me. And... you know, my dying, I got there once and died to it, and it wasn't any worse than I experienced with other bosses in the game, right? Like, there's a bit of that bullet hell element, and you got to learn the patterns, and so, you know, of course you're going to get run over by it the first time you see it. And so when I got there, I didn't think, like, oh, I will never touch this game again. It was just like, okay, oh, cool, nice, okay. next time I play it, I hope I get right back there. And then never touched the game again.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that boss's final form is one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's completely unfair and not worth beating, or if it's like, oh, you're so close, you just got to learn this and finish it. But for some reason, I wandered away and never came back.
Yeah, and that's kind of like a Souls game where the it's tricky enough in your hands that going back you would be rusty, so you would have a. You'd have to kind of make up for skill debt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's now a sequel.
There is.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know I saw stuff about Rogue Legacy 2. I don't know if it's out or if it's coming out.
I think it's really
out in 2020.
Yeah. It seems a lot better. If I remember correctly, the original Rogue Legacy, you always had the same attacks, right? Like the same weapon.
I can't remember if there were traits that would cause you to have different attacks, but I remember it being very simplistic.
Yeah, I think this one, each class has a different weapon, which really adds to it.
Interesting.
Good question, Dennis.
Yeah, good answers, everyone.
Yeah, thank you for posting it. Thank you for answering, everybody. If you want to participate, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch the prompt go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games, some of which are exciting to us. I've got one. This is not exciting to me. This is more of a PSA. I'm telling people who are interested in going into Elden Ring unspoiled, keep your head on a swivel. This is always the case when a big game is coming out. Things leak. People get a hold of early retail copies. Details get out there. I saw a headline about this and immediately averted my eyes. But the character creator for Elden Ring got leaked. And the headline that I saw was that people like it and say it's good, which is already too much information for me. So just
I mean, really, what kind of From game can this really be if it has a good character creator?
Yeah, and no true fan thinks any part of the game they love is good.
You are inadvertently like doing it like a weird inverse mirror of people who give feedback on Bonfireside Chat, who think it is solely our duty to say good things about the Souls games, which is a weird misunderstanding of criticism to me. So just telling people, like I said, keep your head on a swivel, update your mutes and your filters. I'm probably going to be visiting video game news sites less because that's where I saw this this headline. We've got a little bit more than a month left. Until we can get our hands on it ourselves. So that's my PSA to everybody.
So more specifically, keep your head not on a swivel. Keep your head on the dirt.
Yeah.
Pointed downwards.
Yes. Just keep your eyes down is what I would say. Jal is not on here, but she put in that Resident Evil 4 released 17 years ago today. As of the day we're recording, all of us are,
can start smoking next year.
All of us will soon be dust. We can
not if it's in New Zealand.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, yeah, it's probably right.
Good point.
Yeah. We can send Resident Evil off to war, with a parental letter. RE4 can enlist. So Shinji Mikami can send his boy out. Maybe he comes back a man.
Resident Evil 4 never came back.
The future refused to change. Ben, what is Konami predictably doing?
They're selling NFTs of the artwork from Castlevania.
Those assholes.
You know, it's like sometimes I thought I was being too dismissive of NFTs without taking time to give them a shot, but then I read an article like this and I'm like, nah, I think I'm on the right side of this.
No, it's one of those things where it sounds stupid because it is. No, you are just understanding people when they tell you how it works. Yes, it is as dumb as it sounds.
Mm-hmm. It's the 35th anniversary of Castlevania, so that's why they're doing it. They're just selling artwork.
I can't think of a more fitting tribute.
No, they're selling a receipt to a digital copy of artwork.
That's true.
Yeah, they're selling a database entry, except it's on a blockchain. A database would suffice, but it's on a blockchain, so.
Sigh.
This did make me go over to the NFT just to try and see how it works. But yeah, there's a lot of links and there's a lot of JSON, but it is not clear what you are actually buying. So.
Yeah. You're buying money laundering is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, my initial reaction to this was, the only surprising thing about Konami selling NFTs is that they didn't do it sooner.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
When are we going to have a headline about such and such developer is not doing NFTs?
There have been a few of those. There were developers
rather proactively doing that rather than trying to and getting shut down so hard that they back out.
I think Steam, right? Didn't they announce they weren't going to sell NFT games on Steam?
Yeah.
Seen Steam trading cards?
Yeah,
they're horning in on their business.
Yes, that was part of Valve's. They were inadvertently they did the right thing for the wrong reason. So, yeah,
sure.
Let's see, Dennis, what is going on in the world of the world of speedruns?
Yeah, people are always finding wacky new ways to do speedruns in fun ways to watch. And the most recent example of awesomeness comes from streamer Mist AWP. And she plays Celeste, which is a very simple yet profound platformer that is also very difficult. She beat the entire thing in 2 hours and 14 minutes using a racing wheel. So the racing wheel, you know, you would turn left and right to control Celeste's movement. And then she used paddle shifters for jumping and warping, etc. So a surprising amount of control all on the wheel without needing to remove your hands. There was also a six-speed shifter that she had as a part of the racing wheel that you can, you know, move in a lot of different directions. So that was rigged up as well. Yeah. But beating Celeste is an accomplishment. Beating it with a racing wheel is like, you know, beating Dark Souls with a banana or with just one key or what have you. Like, this is very impressive. And I was put to shame. I just, you know, looked up some of the videos of sections. Mist AWP gets through sections of this game with a steering wheel way faster than I ever did with a keyboard and lots of persistence. So,
yeah,
well done. And I can't wait until Celeste is beaten with a banana.
It's on its way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't seen more of this with Microsoft's, their crazy accessible controller that it's like a whole bunch of like individual, like actuator pads, have been put out. Once that was released, I started watching for more crazy stuff like this. Not that this is not impressive. This is crazy impressive. Mm-hmm. What a wild and specific skill. Good for her.
Yes. I think the thing that got me, that I thought was very interesting is watching, the way that she used the wheel. I kind of thought that, with the inputs for Celeste being digital, she would be very light on the touch.
Mm-hmm.
Not move the wheel much, but she really cranks it one direction or another as she's speedrunning. So interesting stuff.
I wonder, so it's digital, but like it has to be on or off. I wonder if it's Celeste is only moving in a direction while the wheel is turning.
Oh God,
that might be it. Or I mean, this also makes sense to me, like moving very gradually and like in a very controlled way, like that fatigues more than doing big swings, just because it takes more attention.
It's easier to mess up, right?
Yeah. So I wonder if she figured out a way to like set the sensitivity where she can do it with bigger motions, with less fatigue, so she can get through all 2 hours or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, but fun to watch, and then also just fun to watch sections where she blows through really difficult puzzles on the first try, and it's just like, man, she seems as surprised by it at times as I was, but it is a crazy, crazy, very niche skill to have, and very fun to watch.
Awesome. And David, you got a story?
Nope, I am boycotting reality until it gets better.
Attaboy. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
Oh, thank you so much for listening to level number 399. Do we have plans for 400? No, just reading the response or reading the title of the year. Let's keep things humble here. Yeah. So if you're going to vote in the title of the year poll, look at our socials for that. Let me see here. The deadline will be end of the day on. Does the 17th give you enough time to tabulate, Dennis?
Yeah, that should be perfect.
Okay, cool. Real simple. Go look at the titles, laugh, and vote. Just really indulge us in our self-indulgence. Otherwise, you know, the stuff you can do, ratings, reviews, iTunes, subscriptions, all of that kind of deal. Is there anything big I'm forgetting?
Nope. Just a little anecdote for this self-indulgence. The, you know, text I had from last year, 'cause I copy over the poll, for 2020, it was like, it's time to wring one bit of joy out of this godforsaken year. And I'm like, that is all too appropriate.
Don't need to change
again. Yeah, I know. that is sad that it is still so relevant.
So I've been Cole Ross. You can catch me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia, and I want to try something new. You can buy the print and play copy of Deck of Wonders on itch.io, or you know. No one actually says it. You just type
itch.io.
Yeah.
Itch.io.
Yeah.
And so go check that out if you are interested to play the game.
Yeah.
I'm David Meismith, but only under protest.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
and stick around for some titles. I only have one. It is some kind of voodoo gun. I just thought that
I support this message.
I laughed at that. That was fun. Who else has one?
I have five. It was a big week for me.
Okay.
I've got, I can't quote The Wire. Shut up. I also have Mother Nature has the ultimate kill streak.
Okay.
And then some that are a little more, shorter in the range of what we usually see for titles is Handheld by God. Make Shorter Up. and Update the Sorbo Tracker.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I didn't write them down, but I had Sorbo Tracker and there was one other one since then, but I have since forgotten.
Okay.
Hence the value of writing down.
and David.
I've got nothing. Sorry, this was not much, not my best week.
That's fine.
It's all good.
Yeah. Cool. So Sorbo Tracker gets the votes.
Yeah, I'm fine stabilizing it as the Sorbo Tracker.
Or update the Sorbo Tracker. I've got, yeah.
What was the context for that?
Just the Hercules pinball
oh,
machine.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And then we were joking about Kevin Sorbo's career.
Really punching down.
cool. Okay.
Yeah, I'll vote for the full like update the Sorbo tracker.
Alrighty.
Cool. My man Kevin Sorbo is trying to put up cage like numbers. By the way, according to his.
According to his what? I'm sorry.
His IMDb. He's got like 4+ movies per year for like the last like I don't know 8 years. And holy cow! Jeez.
It's
2015 was a good year for Sorbo.
His Wikipedia filmography is really funny because it starts out Blue Links and then it just goes you know the black and then red. Oh man! All right. Well, I think I'm gonna go.
Yeah, have a good night, guys.
Have a good week, everybody. Have a better week, David.
Take it easy. See you guys.
Take care,
everybody. See you around.
Bye.